This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by ChristianAudio.com. Listeners of the Gospel Coalition podcast can get Rosaria Butterfield's Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert audiobook download for free from Christian Audio. Add the audiobook to your cart at www.christianaudio.com and use the discount code TGC2016 at checkout. This offer is good through July 31, 2016. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. Today's podcast is a roundtable discussion with J.D. Greer, Trevin Wax, and Greg Gilbert on potential dangers and overreach for the gospel-centered movement.
One of the questions I have is, you know, believing that this whole return to the gospel is a movement that really has been, you know, done in the church by the Holy Spirit. One of the questions I have is 20 years from now, when we're looking back on what God did in this time, what is it that we are likely to say, man, we really had the emphasis there, right? But we neglected some of these other things. Where did gospel centeredness go off or go wrong? Is it possible for us to already start to see certain trends of where this movement may, you know, go less than what is biblically faithful?
Well, I think just in my own heart and mind and kind of watching how this movement's unfolded, I think there's the possibility and the potential of us in our seeking of clarity on the gospel, which is a good thing, which is something that's a necessary thing, we can tend to become so focused on getting the bare facts right of the gospel, of understanding the gospel and how it relates to its implications, and sort of we can sort of have this knowledge at a cerebral level, but it not really be what's captivating our hearts, what's affecting our hearts. So we're able very easily to say, hey, there's something wrong with what that guy's preaching, mm-hmm. or there's something wrong in that book, or this guy's confusing gospel and implications and whatnot. But it's not the gospel, the beauty of the gospel, and the mm-hmm. God of the gospel who's actually captivating our hearts, our affections, our emotions, and whatnot. So it's up here, but not
right
in here.
You know, that reminds me, recently I was at my home church, the church I grew up in, and there was a sweet little lady there who would not be able to articulate any of the terms for gospel centeredness. Mm-hmm. She would probably have never heard of John Piper or Tim Keller. Mm-hmm. But she started to talk about in a way that just exuded love for Jesus, gratefulness for his grace and the cross. And I remember standing there, and it was like God knocked me down about four levels, because I'm like, the whole point of gospel centeredness is love for Jesus, and this woman has it. And I felt like we've created, it's possible for us to create a certain amount of, like, we use right terms, the right shibboleths mm-hmm. here, and forget that the point of gospel centeredness is not being able to point out who doesn't use the terms of gospel centeredness. The point is loving Jesus.
Yeah.
And how ironic that a movement that was supposed to take us back to the gospel, to love God and walk in humility, has actually contributed to a lot of pride of looking down on other people. Because the point is loving the God of the gospel.
Yeah. It is humbling, isn't it? Because you may have your systematic categories nailed down, but this dear old woman may have been loving Jesus for twice as long as you've been born, and she knows him well.
Well, you know, the demons have the systematic theology
yeah.
right down the line.
Yeah,
but they're still devils.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So, I mean, but not downplaying the need to think clearly about the gospel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
You need to think clearly about the gospel.
There's also a pretty common, I think, in Christian experience, maybe it's human experience, a kind of knife's edge balance between thinking and doing,
mm-hmm.
and you can fall off into one or the other and neglect the other. But I don't think the Christian life and the scriptures allow us to right. fall off the knife's edge, though. You need to be thinking about the gospel and nailing down exactly what the message is of the gospel. But then, my goodness, I mean, the great commission that Jesus has given us is to go out and proclaim that gospel, and not just to each other either, by defining it among Christians and Gospel Coalition. It's to define it and then mm-hmm. proclaim it outside.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be very careful that we're not just proclaiming the gospel in a great Gospel Coalition circle and getting it closer and closer saying things outward.
And that comes along with, I mean, you talk about this in your book, and I'm seeing other people talk mm-hmm. about the idea of preaching the gospel to yourself. I think that's very helpful, because I think we need to constantly be just immersing ourselves in the truth of the gospel as a way of motivating the life change and the life transformation that comes from the gospel. But I think at the same time, though, we want to be careful. The end goal is not a bunch of people walking around preaching the gospel to themselves.
Right.
It's people that are transformed by the gospel, then living on mission, that are actually going out witnessing to their neighbors and whatnot.
One of the things that I think relates to that is the idea that when we read the New Testament, we do see a lot of instruction about Christian living. We see a lot, for lack of better terms, commands.
Sure.
And I know that as I have begun to rediscover the true heart change that comes from the freedom of the gospel and watching that happen in people, there have been questions from people in my congregation, like, well, why is it that there are all these commands where, you know, Paul commands us to forsake not the assembling of ourselves, and he, you know, commands us about giving and all those different kinds of things. And I've, you know, even gotten criticism because, you know, like, well, Pastor, when it's, you know, when you really need something, then you start preaching the law. Maybe that's true. But I think one of the things to realize is that there is a balance in how the Bible puts forward the commands, puts forward the gospel, but then gives us commands so that we are able to take these things that are capturing our heart in the gospel and showing us what it actually looks like to love God and to love each other. You don't want to try to be more gospel-centered than Jesus.
Well,
that would
commands,
be a bad...
Commands, the commands don't change, right? Mm-hmm. The moral law of God doesn't change. It's just that all of a sudden, because of the gospel, you now have the Holy Spirit dwelling in your heart and crying out, Abba, Father, and empowering you now to live like Jesus was living.
Right.
So, but God's law is unchanging.
Right.
I've heard it described before as like railroad tracks.
Yeah. The laws of God are like railroad tracks that tell us the way to go, but are powerless to push the engine along the tracks. And the gospel
does
that.
And that's what the gospel does. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I think it's a question of emphasis. You preach the commands, but you teach people to adore the gospel because that what gives them the power to obey the commands.
Now, how does the gospel lead us to mission in the sense of, first you have the Great Commission, preaching the gospel, making disciples, whatnot. How does the gospel form us into the kind of people who have on their hearts the kind of ministry that Jesus had? Who are involved in social work, mercy ministry, doing things out in the world, in the community, together with the proclamation of the gospel. How does that lead us? How does mission lead us to be those kinds of people?
One of the things that I have been doing for the last several years as I've been on this Discovery of the Gospel is I've written a gospel prayer in which every day I try to express the gospel back to God. It actually forms the backbone of the book that I wrote. And one of the phrases in there is, God, as you have been to me, so I will be to others. So I start to see the world the way through the lens of how Jesus saw me. Where would I be without Jesus? I'd be completely lost. Where would I be without Jesus? The exact place that millions of people are without me, without me preaching, without me giving. Seeing the world through the lens of the gospel is seeing God's willingness to save and his power to save. And that radically changes how I live when I see the generosity that's been given to me and the power that is able to save the world. Anybody that doesn't push into radical sacrifice and radical faith has never really experienced the gospel.
Yeah, the logic of it is simple and powerful, isn't it? And it's all over the New Testament. You have been loved, therefore love. You have been forgiven, therefore forgive. You have been rescued, therefore, you know, save the rescue.
But it's always grounded in that what it's God always, has done for
that's
us.
That's right. Exactly. Not that we loved first, but that God first loved us.
Which brings us back, you know, kind of that original question of where could this go wrong. I think in emphasizing the heart change that takes place when we experience the gospel, to fail to connect that to where we really do work in the world for the salvation of people, for the empowerment of the poor, for the blessing of our neighbors and our family, I think that could be a place where we almost overreact. My problem with those people who tell us to get engaged with the poor and tell us all these things that Christians do is not really what they're saying. It's why they're telling us to do those things or the motivation they're giving us to do those things.
Yeah, because a lot of those things that you mentioned are good things. They're important things, but the important question to ask is, well, where do those things click in theologically? So now we're back on the thinking side, not just doing for the sake of doing, but making sure that what we do is clicked in theologically to the right place. And you can mess that up a lot if you say, for example, that that giving to the poor, for instance, or empowering the poor, a good thing though it is, if you make that the center of the gospel, I would say you've taken a good thing and you've clicked it into the wrong place.
You've taken the effects of the gospel and substituted
and
that for
you,
the gospel.
Where you should click those good things in, theologically, I think, is as it's a fruit of the Christian life. Hmm. It's loving neighbor as yourself. It's obedience to Christ. But it's it's not the center of the gospel.
And the irony is, when you put it there, that you're actually short-circuiting the power that's going to keep that sort of action taking place. I mean, that's what, if the gospel is the fuel that's going to make us people who care about the poor and who are wanting to be involved in mercy ministry and wanting to evangelize the lost, you put these things in the wrong place or you give them the emphasis that is not their due. And what actually happens is the irony is that you create a cycle that's not going to be able to last over a long period of time.
Hmm. Yeah. I love your analogy of fruit. Well, your analogy.
Not mine.
How about the Apostle Paul or the Holy Spirit even? Yeah. But, you know, the whole idea of fruit is that fruit comes from something that is alive. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about fruit, like offspring, human offspring comes as a result of a man and woman loving each other, you know, and spiritual fruit is the offspring of loving, intimate encounters with Jesus Christ, and that produces spiritual fruit. And I think a lot of times what we do is we take the fruit and treat the fruit as if the fruit can be produced by human will and exertion and not as the natural response to the gospel.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant image. I mean, we should just admit that Jesus was a genius in his teaching.
He had some good things to say.
You can press that analogy a long way.
Yeah.
You remember Piper playing with it at T4G 8 or 10, I don't remember which one it was, and he made the analogy that you can't take the fruit and try to stick it down in the root.
Huh.
That's not where it belongs.
True transformation is always the fruit.
It pushes from the bottom up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can fall into very easily taking those fruits and sticking them down in the root as if they are the thing that drives righteousness and drives our standing before God.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Absolutely. That's good.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org.